From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 10th day of June, 2021. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll detail the numbers as they were released earlier today from the United States Department of Agriculture. You can find them as well on our website at willag.org. We'll talk about those numbers and the reaction in Chicago with Matt Bennett from agmarket.net. out of Windsor, Illinois, and we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And we'll talk about some help the University of Illinois would like from you if you're willing to volunteer and do some rootworm counts in your fields. We'll do that with Nick Sider, extension entomologist, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's start with the USDA report, the monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. This month's 2021-22 U.S. corn outlook, that's the new crop, is for reduced beginning and ending stocks. Beginning stocks are down 150 million bushels. That reflects projected increases for the new crop in corn used for ethanol and exports. Corn used for ethanol raised 75 million bushels based on the most recent data from the Grain Crushings and Co-Products report. And the weekly ethanol production in refiner and blender net inputs data during May, which indicate demand is almost back to levels for ethanol seen prior to COVID-19. Exports also raised, that up 75 million bushels based on the export inspection data for the month of May. That implies continued robust global demand for U.S. corn despite the high prices. And with no use changes for 2021-22, that means USDA did not fiddle with its new crop supply and demand table other than the incoming number. Ending stocks are lowered by that same 150 million bushels, 75 and 75 for ethanol exports, and the season's average farm price for new crop, the crop in ground tonight right now, is unchanged at $5.70 a bushel. This month, U.S. soybean supply and use projections for new crop include higher beginning and ending stocks. The higher beginning stocks reflect a lower crush forecast for the old crop with higher soybean beginning stocks and no use changes. Ending stocks for the new crop are proposed and projected at 155 million bushels. That's up 15 million bushels from last month. The 2021-22 season's average soybean and product price forecast are unchanged from the May forecast at $13.85 a bushel for new crop beans. Well, here's how all that played out in Chicago. The futures finished corn at $6.99 a bushel in the July contract, up 8.25 for the day. September at 6.38 1/4, 6.25 higher in December corn, 6.16 1/2 up 6.75. Nearby July soybeans down 18.5 cents. They settled at $15.44. The November new crop at $14.59 1/2 a bushel, up 11.25 cents. Bean meal down $4.80. The bean oil for the day $1.13 lower. Wheat futures were down, or rather up, 1.5 cents at 6.83 3/4. In the soft red July, the hard red July, up 4.5 cents at 6.40 1/4. In the spring wheat at 7.81 3/4, up 12 cents. That in the September contract for the afternoon. Live cattle futures were higher, feeders were higher, and lean hogs were a bit lower. Well, as it happens, Matt Bennett is out of the office this afternoon, so we're not able to get hold of him. However, Jerry Golke is here from the Golke Group. Thanks, Jerry, for doing this on short notice for me today. USDA and CONAB both released some numbers today. Start where you want. The CONAB numbers were out earlier. They did lower the corn production. However, USDA didn't go as low as they happened to. What'd you think of those sets of numbers?
Well, I thought it was justified to see a higher day in corn, and so before we closed it, shortly after the open, I bought some corn just against some hedges, and thinking maybe for once the traders might be right and say this is going to be a bullish report. But as you figured out, why it wasn't bullish enough to really take out. It closed up there to where we hit the highs of these corn around 6.28. We closed about 13 cents off the high. So volatility continues. It seems to be that they always somehow try to figure out a way to get 10 cents in corn and maybe even 20 in beans on a trading race day. But I think CONAB went in the right direction. I think they're a little slow from what we've seen in the past. They're a little slow, kind of like our USDA and Mass. They're a little slow to relate to maybe the actual numbers. I think that comes down. And if you look at some other firms out there, some notable firms, they're lower yet. So I look at it and say, well, 3 million metric tons is about 120 million bushels, or another half is 160 total. You got 160 less million bushels of corn that's going to compete with us, and it gets tighter. I think the real nut is going to come when we got to look at the how much we can reduce the yield and still increase acres. You know, maybe that 3 million acres, we're at 94.1, I think, and that's on the high side of things, but there are people higher. So, again, all comes down to weather, and I hate weather markets, but that's what got us to these levels, so you got to respect them.
Yeah, so I believe what you just told me is at the end of the month, you expect a bigger corn acreage number up at 94.1 from your perspective, and that could make up for any lower yield that we might be looking at. Can you tell me about what you think yield is? And I'd like to also hear what you're hearing from Minot, the area that you have farmed there in North Dakota.
Well, as you probably knew, in North Dakota, we had torrential rains down around Bismarck, Mandan, couple nights ago. I mean, I saw pictures as it was raining. People were sending me photographs and the fields were flooded. They told me their crops weren't that high, you know, some of them, and they were just decimated. Now, as dry as it was, I'm sure it went away fairly quickly, but they had winds and hail, and they had a torrential rain, some cases, I think 8 inches in some places. So when that storm actually opened up, it really deluged them. But in Minot, they got nothing, and north of Bismarck, very little, and then you get up to closer to the Canadian border where my son-in-law and daughter farm, they got nothing, but that happens to be the pothole region, so they've got subsoil moisture. So as I can say, and they can say, we're holding on, and but according to Drew Lerner, and you've had him on a number of times as well, the proof of the pudding is going to come in July, and I know in our case here in northern Illinois, we were looking pretty good. I just tried go back from California and went through Nebraska and Iowa. Southern Iowa looks good. Nebraska, the best looking corn that I saw was in, from the Quad Cities North, and it looks really well. But it's getting to the point now where it's going to need that, knee high corn is going to need rain every week or rely on subsoil. And I don't think we have it. I saw corn yesterday on light ground turning that purpley silver look. And I farm some light ground. And when that happens, I'm saying, I'm only about 7 days away from my good ground getting starting to wilt. And we saw wilting at the end rows. So I think we're getting, we're on that edge where we've got to get some rain, and a half inch would help, But right now that it's just not there. And they did get rain in North Dakota in the eastern part around west of Grand Forks. They got an inch and a half in a narrow band again, we have clients in northern Minnesota who we called yesterday, and they said that spring wheat crop is in much worse shape than the government or anybody else thinks. And of course, we don't get much out of the government on spring wheat. They kind of kicked that can down the road. So soybeans are small, and corn in a lot of areas in North Dakota wasn't out far enough to really get nipped by that frost. But if you watch the planting progress, South Dakota was a lot further planted than what North Dakota was, and we have plants in there as well, and they mentioned that a lot of their corn got smoked. I mean, it was high enough to where the frost got it, and so they're thinking of replanting and the beans or whatever they can do.
For those who are wondering, that last part of your trip would have been back to Rockford, where you live and the home farms are.
Right.
I made the trip yesterday from here straight west to the middle of the state, to Elkhart, where the farm is, and I got to tell you, while you said soybeans were little, the soybeans and the corn looked good. The soybeans were big. I was really surprised. I actually taken aback because I don't get out of the area as often as I used to because of COVID and because I work out of the home instead of on campus at the moment. But the soybeans looked really good. The corn looked good all the way over. We had an inch here not so long ago, and that made a huge difference in the way. And you could see that all the way through Decatur, and then it sort of tailed off. I think I had in that same period where we had an inch in the last 7 days in the Champaign County area, about 3/10 over in the Springfield Lincoln area, and you could see it. You could really see it. And I know I had more rain over there by about 5 inches from the beginning of the January to now, rather than here. But it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference. So rainfall is going to be a big thing going forward.
Yeah, I would say, and I looked at this, and I'm telling, you know, people that I associate closely with, that this is probably the best looking crop, the most even crop that I've seen, that I've grown in my memory. And that's a poor testament, I guess, to my ability to farm. But I went forward, and I went slower, and I went deeper. And the fields are level. There's no stragglers to speak of. We have perfect weed control, except for a few broadleaves sticking out here and there. But I suppose that'll come if we get some rain. But as far as the stand in beans and in corn both, I couldn't ask for a better start to this year. And but now we're getting close to where rain is a must, unless we can get rid of this heat. And of course we are cooling down tonight a little bit. The nice thing about being dry is that it feels like, you know, at night in North Dakota you get a 30 degree drop in temperatures from 95 to 65, and that helps the corn. But here in Illinois it's been beautiful until we start getting humidity, and maybe that'll bring some rain. But we were just doing some calculations with if we come up with our acres, and I think we're going to use something more like 93.5 or 4, somewhere in there, about 3.5 million acres, 3 million acres more. Inform is way up there. But they've been pretty accurate. They've changed their modus operandi, and they've been a lot more accurate on price prediction and acres than they were in the past 15, 20 years, I think, that we've been with them. And they're much higher. And I will say that I don't know of an acre of ground that didn't get planted, because it's pretty hard not to plant something at these prices. And I think we'll see harvested acres go up unless we kill it with drought. But as we have a tendency, you know, to, when corn was $7, I mentioned a couple times, I think maybe it was on your show, if I see a corn cob laying on the ground, I'll stop and pick it up, because I'm saying, you know, a couple of them, that's a nickel. You know, well, we have a tendency to do the best job we can of harvesting our grain and doing it all. So our harvested acres would go up rather than maybe feed it to some animals. But this is certainly a dilemma and a real son of a gun to try to trade. It seems like if I try to day trade something, I'm 180 degrees apart. And about the time I do just the opposite of what I think I'm going to do, I'm going to say, I'm going to fool them. Instead of buying, I'm going to sell. It goes the other way. So, you know, you can't win for losing. But the good news is that maybe our bottom line this fall, if we get a halfway decent crop, we'll have a tax problem.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it. I know we'll talk with you again in the future. And thanks for filling in on real short notice today.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
That's Jerry Gulkey. He is with the Gulkey Group. Entomologists in the state of Illinois are looking for farmers to help them trap and track and count western and northern corn rootworm. It's for a specific reason, kind of to try to get a heads up on how this rootworm is adapting to the technology that's being used to control it, so that the agricultural industry can adequately respond ahead of the curve rather than trying to catch up. Illinois Extension entomologist Nick Sider explains exactly what the volunteers would be doing in their corn or soybean fields.
Well, the most important thing you have to do if you volunteer, we will send you a set of sticky card traps, and you'll volunteer to set those out in a transect of 4 in one field, corn or soybean, your choice, whatever, whether you're more interested in rotated or continuous corn, that's up to you. Then you'll replace those traps every week for 4 weeks, and you'll count the number of western corn rootworms and the number of northern corn rootworms on each of those 4 traps, and send us that information. We'll also ask you for some additional information about your field. For instance, if you've had a history of rootworm problems over the last few years, if you're in long-term continuous corn, how long you've been in corn, or if you're in a rotated situation, how you would characterize the BT resistance that you might have in your area, and other questions like that about field history, so that we can get a picture of what your particular situation is. We won't be sharing your specific location with anyone. We won't be sharing your GPS coordinates or anything like that. We will be sharing those data with those identifiers removed.
That data without the identifiers will be collected and compiled across the whole of the center part of the United States, says Nick Sider. The extension entomologist says it's a collaborative effort throughout the Midwest.
This is an effort that was started by our colleagues at Iowa State last year for Iowa. They thought it went so well there that they wanted to extend the opportunity to participate in this to other surrounding states where rootworm is a problem. And in fact, we'll have many states throughout the north central United States participating in this effort. And so we're hoping to get a better picture, not just within Illinois, of what our problem areas are and how that rootworm population is changing over time. This is something we want to do over the years, really throughout the north central of the region of the U.S. where we grow corn, to get a picture that's more regional and maybe to give ourselves a heads up. For instance, over the last few years, they were seeing those northern corn rootworm issues to our north in Wisconsin and Minnesota well before we were, and you see that start to creep south. It's good to know what's going on in these surrounding states, because often that's a preview of what we could be seeing within the next few years.
Again, that was Illinois Extension entomologist Nick Sider. By the way, the North Central region of Extension includes the following states: North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. There are 12 in all. On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. That's at tstormweather.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. Tell me a little bit about this next two-week period, please.
Well, we're going to see temperatures start to cool off once we get into next week, but we aren't going to see a true cool weather pattern. We'll just see temperatures a little bit lower than where they have been. So basically in the 80s and 90s over the next 3 to 4 days, a cool front comes through early next week. Then we'll see a puff of heat after a day or two, but then a stronger cool off comes in sometime around Thursday and Friday next week. And so that takes us through our temperatures. The one uncertainty, though, regards rainfall. We will see some decent thunderstorm clusters in western areas tonight and then into tomorrow. A lot of Iowa and Minnesota, and of course even parts of Illinois, Indiana, and on to the north need some rain. But the real area that needs rain is in the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, then parts of Nebraska, and into Missouri. We will see some storms tonight and into tomorrow, and we should see a few storms here and there next week. But based on everything that we're looking at, a large area is still going to be drier than normal over the next 7 days, which just increases that need for rain beyond then.
That puts us into the last third of the month of June. Anything of interest that you're looking at there?
Well, just no matter how you look at it, you just don't draw up a scenario in which you see a lot of rainfall. The big problem is that we have surface level high pressure in the southeastern U.S., while upper level high pressure is located off to our west. That leaves us in this area where humidities are lower than ideal because of that high in the southeast, while energies are having a difficult time moving into the Corn Belt because of the high off to the west. So you put those two together and you conclude that, yes, there will be some thunderstorms just because it's summertime and it's never 100% dry. But will we see large, widespread, sweeping, big rain events? That looks pretty unlikely the way we see it at the moment. And if that's the case, then we're really setting ourselves up to need some big rains at the end of the month. We're already dealing with a month that's been pretty dry to this point. If everything we've talked about is correct over the next 10 days, then all of a sudden, it doesn't take a lot to start looking at one of the driest Junes on record in the Corn Belt. Now, the driest June on record was back in 1933, and then the second driest was in 1988. Now, if we were to see about 1 inch of rain across the Corn Belt through the end of the month, we would beat those records and we'd clearly be wetter than what happened back then. And 1 inch of rain over the next 20 days is pretty achievable. It'd have to be pretty dry not to break out of that. But we need to get about 2 inches or maybe even 2.5 inches of rain to start breaking out of the 10 to 20 driest on record, and that's looking a little bit more difficult the way we see it now. So there's still a ways to go here, Todd, but the point is that we're going to need to see some rain show up in a bigger fashion than they have recently. Now, some listeners are probably in Ohio and in parts of Indiana and are saying, what is this guy talking about? Everything's looking pretty good for us. It's all as you move off to the west into the heart of the Corn Belt and parts of Iowa and Minnesota. That's kind of where the dryness is today, and it also extends into parts of northern Illinois.
I have a question about that related to some historical data I saw on the drought monitor. Just simple maps with the drought monitor at this time of year over a couple of decades, maybe longer than that. And it appeared to me that this year, with a drought so large in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, is just an oddity. Is that correct?
Well, anytime you have a drought, it's an oddity because typically you would expect rainfall to fall within a normal range, so you wouldn't see a big dry area. But we've certainly seen this in the past. I mean, if you look at 1988, it was certainly as dry as it is right now in the northwestern Corn Belt. The difference, though, between what happened then and what's happening at the moment is that the rest of the central U.S. is a lot wetter than in 1988. It's kind of located at the moment in those northern growing areas. Now, it is possible for this to continue simply because of a few different things. I mean, number one, since it is drying out and we're expecting it to stay fairly dry, at some point the soil moisture will become a factor because you need rain to make it rain. We've talked about this in the past, but essentially, if it's raining a lot, then on the days that are nice and warm, like today, you evaporate all that soil moisture out of the ground, it turns into water vapor, and then it's pretty easy to pop some new thunderstorms. But if the soil is pretty dry, then what happens is you get real warm, but you don't have the humidity values increase, and so then it's much more difficult for thunderstorms to develop. And we're not quite there yet because it's still early June, but 2-3 weeks from now, if this pattern persists, then all of a sudden that becomes a factor. So these are the types of things that you need to think about. Some people might look at that and say, oh, well, look, the drought's expanding, when really what's happening is just not raining. And then, yes, it is expanding, but it's also because you're starting to add in some other features that are only part of the summertime climate as opposed to the rest of the year.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great day, Todd.
You too. That's Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. One closing thought here is it's related to his last sentence. That sometimes the dry features are just part of normal summer weather. That was what CONAB tried to, that's part of what CONAB from Brazil tried to explain in its crop report earlier today. The drop total corn production to 96.4 million tons there, saying the expected drop is mainly due to the delay in soybean harvest, and as a result, the planting of a large part of the corn second crop area outside of the indicated window, which put it into the driest part of the growing season for Safrina or second crop corn in that nation.